If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. Our hosts are Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I say in the lowest voice I'll use in the remainder of 2012.
Mr. Justin R. Young.
Hi, everybody!
And my name is Andrew Main. Remember me?
We're back. Oh, my gosh. I had this mysterious dream. It was as if the three of us got together every Monday to discuss all the news of what's weird in the world, to explore strange scenarios and project what we would do in various situations. It was the greatest dream. And then I woke up for 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Six
well,
long weeks.
You know, it was because we gamely tried to move it along, and we had some guest hosts, but you just really find out how much we just folded,
We figured out if your master plan was for us to, if your master plan was for us to appreciate how good you are running this ship of service, then consider your point made, because it was tough being a two-man system.
My plan was like, man, this show probably really fun just to listen to. So I just want to listen to this show. You know, it's what I want to do. Screw making it. It's like, you know, it's like when they ask some director, like, oh, do you want to do the new Star Wars? And like, no, I want to watch them.
Yeah.
And apparently, I need to come back in and help make them.
Yes. Yes. No, you do. You do. This, because this is garbage without you.
I missed torturing Brian. I missed Justin. And now you got
more people to torture.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is that, you know, I don't know if you noticed the trend, Brian, but you and I seem to be agreeing on a lot more things and coming at odds with Justin on stuff.
That would be me realizing that it's more simple to just fold my beliefs rather than suffer your wrath.
The snuggery?
Oh, yeah. Do we have an update? Can we jump straight in?
Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you what. We're going to give you guys a little radio tease here for this, the return and the 2012 end. We have an update on the snuggery for which we've long teased. We will read that.
Let me just give a real quick, just for those of you didn't follow or new to the podcast, the snuggery was one of our most epic debates we've ever had, ranging there with space elevator, singularity, you know, which child of Brian's we should murder first, whatever.
S got real is all I'm going to say. We found ourselves
absolutely
shockingly passionate in our debates about just how, lowbrow and visceral the paid for snuggle experience was in Rochester, New York.
Well, Brian and I agree that we thought there could be just something totally innocent about it, that it didn't have to be of a sexual nature. Well, Justin Deviant Young,
I believe the number 98%
totally
was thrown around there.
98%, but because much like the shadow, I know what evil lurks in the hearts of men,
Mr. Pedagrope.
Exactly, and my point was that 98% of the people that went to the snuggery and paid for those of you. Yeah, it's a place in Rochester where two girls will for a price, like a massage therapy, will snuggle with you.
Snuggle.
And you can, you know, hold on to them and get a little snuggle action.
Sure. Well,
it doesn't have to be both at once. It can just be one at a time.
You can do both of them.
You can do it. They offer the snuggle Sammy?
They offer the Sammy. Now,
it's cold there.
By the way, we never did get the proof to the question that I posited to Brian on whether or not Bonnie would be okay with you going.
You just missed her. Unfortunately, she went out and had a baby. Otherwise, she would be here, I'm sure, addressing this issue, discussing the limits of how far she would trust me.
For all the high-minded talk of, it's therapeutic. Some people are just lonely. Brian refuses to ask Bonnie whether or not it's okay if he went and did it.
I'm going to interject real quick, by the way. That's the most exciting news of the year, though, is we have another Brushwood on the planet.
Yeah, we do, man. She's pink and healthy and beautiful. It's a little calliope brushwood. She came out just great, man. She 10 fingers, 10 toes, the whole deal.
Congratulations, bro. I'm very excited for you. Very, very proud. Very, very, very jealous. You've got three now. Three. You've replicated successfully three times now.
Dude, every parent who's had more than two kids has made the same joke about now I'm playing zone defense, which it's very apropos.
And one awesome middle name for those of you who didn't watch
the
NSFW show.
Calliope Daphne Brushwood, named after our video game review correspondent from the short-lived Game On.
Spelled D-A-F-N-A-Y.
Yes. That's why you have to know, boy, man, was that an interesting situation to sell that to the parents and the in-laws? Like they're all like, well, what are you going to do? Bonnie was like, what are we going to tell people? I'm like, I don't know. Just tell them it's the old Norse spelling of Daphne. Cause we did like the middle name Daphne, but we wanted to give like a hat tip to the fans who meant so much over the last year. But man, looking in my mother-in-law's eyes and be like, we're going to name her a ridiculous spelling of a name that was written as a joke, but now it won't be a joke, and it's going to be her actual name, and we're going to do it because some people on the internet will chuckle at it.
Brian, I want you to record the moment you tell Calliope where that name came from, because I wanted a photo of my reaction when I found out I was named for my dad's pet raccoon.
No way. Were you really?
He had a pet raccoon named Randy. And there's no Andrews, no Andys in my entire family. I'm like, not a Sandy, nobody, nothing. And then I find out one day when he was in college, he named his raccoon Randy. And I'm like, my dad always calls me Andy. I realize where the name came from, why he liked that rhyming sound.
Oh,
there.
My God, that's amazing.
All right. Well, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, I first and foremost want to give a huge shout out to John D. of Rochester. I don't want to say his full name just in case he doesn't want to.
John D. Rockefeller. We can announce that as John D. Rockefeller.
He is the intrepid Weird Things podcast listener who spent his own money to go investigate the snuggery.
Now, I like the idea that, you know, we've gone and looked for like some snakes, snakes, lizards,
ghosts,
feral raccoons and stuff like that, but no. This is really going into the
Hey man, look, we know what puts butts in seats, man. We're no dummies. It's not called paranormal things live. It's not called scientific things. It's not called SpaceX things. It's called weird things. And paying for snuggles is weird.
All right. So here we go. I'm gonna read his account. You guys stop me if you want to make commentary, but this is from the full unedited report of John D.
Rockefeller.
John D. Rockefeller.
First, let me say that my expectations going in were not sexual. I guess that depends on your definition
sexual. Already.
Hold on. It depends on your definition of sexual. I mean, there's obviously a significant amount of intimacy involved. Anyway, I was motivated to go for reasons of curiosity and loneliness, not for sexual gratification.
Okay. So
and
that,
also, might I add, journalistic integrity.
I love the fact that it starts off saying, like, I didn't go in thinking of sexual ... like that's some foreshadowing right there.
It's like the beginning of a movie. Like I didn't start off a criminal.
Yes. I never set out to start a revolution. I just wanted to snuggle for love.
All right, here we go. So anyway, after calling and booking an appointment, I was sent an email with an address and directions. The address was in one of the richest suburbs in Rochester, but still I was unprepared for what the place would look like. Picture a sprawling hilly estate with several beautiful stone-fronted buildings and water features. Jackie met me outside when I parked and led me into the smaller buildings. There, we reviewed the policies yet again.
Yet again. So he calls, he's like, I want to get all up in them snuggles. And she's like, all right, let me stop you right there and explain what you will and will not be doing.
First, stop panting on the phone, sir. This is Skype. I can see what you're doing.
Please put your shirt back on and then we can have a discussion.
hands.
So what are the policies? Like, what do they focus on? There's got to be a bunch of boilerplate, but then like something that they're like, I'd like you to read this line again.
The policies are there on the website.
No. I'm not worried about what the written one is, but like, I'm assuming there has to be some of those that they like point at and like this says blank, and there's some phrase they use to describe pants. Like you're signing this thing, please keep it in your pants.
Sure. All right. Afterwards, I headed up to the loft upstairs to change into the pajamas I was instructed to bring. The loft was pretty small, and the only important piece of furniture was dead center in the room, a tall double bed. She came upstairs, put on some bizarrely ominous-sounding instrumental music, and we crawled in.
Wait, what is this, Kraftwerk?
Dude, I...
Neil Young, like, in the 1980s, like, trans? What is this?
I think it's a dubstep remix of the Enya songs from Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Out of everything, the thing that concerns me the most is putting on PJs. Like, I'd much rather... Because you know I'm terrified of unintentional B-dogs. That's my little word for boner.
Unleash the B-dogs of war.
That's what I say. I say, cry havoc, and here comes the B-dogs.
And then 9 months later, Calliope's born.
Who let the B-dogs out?
Okay, but it's like, so you worry about people, about detectable B-dogs. It's like, I'm going to wear four pairs of boxers and boxer briefs, and then I'm going to put on briefs over my boxer briefs, and then I'm going to wear, like, double-thick denim so that anything does happen that she can't tell. But it's like, you're telling me you want me to strip down just to some sheer, like,
I'm just
silk.
Saying, I can imagine Brian with that thin black electrical tape, and he's going to solve... He's going to solve that problem the way the Lilliputians did to Gulliver. Like, he's just going to tape it down.
I just got the image of, remember in Game of Thrones when the prostitute grabs the eunuch and finds there's nothing there?
Yes.
You know, and like I can see the snuggerist be like, you're not aroused, are you? Oh my God, are you a mannequin?
Did you just call them snuggers? Because that's their word. You don't get to call them that.
Snuggerist.
All right, so we started off with
5 years at Snuggology School, Brian. My profession is a snuggerist.
We started off with some spooning and ran through the entire book of small talk subjects. Everything from where are you from to did you grow up with any pets?
Now is this while they're holding each other?
This is during the snug.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, this is heavy duty. This is pillow talk.
About 20 minutes and two positions later, the conversation petered out, which is fine by me. Paying someone to cuddle was actually strangely liberating. Because I was paying for a service, I felt freer to ask for what I wanted. It was kind of nice, and since I know everyone is wondering, yes, something, arose a handful of times.
B-dogs.
B-dogs. Just a function of two bodies touching. Like I said, I had no desire to actually do anything about it. I'd
say
the flag
said, "What happened? Body starts slapping."
It's not the slappery; it's the snuggery. Come on, man.
I'd say the flag was really only raised to half mast anyway, and we both ignored it. After the hour was up, I forked over the cash. And we went our merry ways. I don't
After
think
the
I do
spooning
regular-
was up, I forked over the cash. All right, nice alliteration there.
I don't think I do it regularly, but I got what I expected out of it, and I could see myself doing
blue
it
blue balls.
Again if
continue, I'm sorry.
Let's keep it classy.
I have a follow-up question, and it will not be classy, but go ahead, please.
Okay. I got what I wanted out of it, and I could see myself doing it again if I feel especially lonely. And while I can't speak for other people's motives, I can say that she is selling what she says she's selling. She's not in the secret prostitution business or whatever. I'm sure that some people go to her looking for something like that. Like Justin said, I know what evil lurks in the hearts of men.
Wait, have you read that? Were you quoting from that, or did that just...
No, I think I said that before.
I know, but he, like, quoted you in the future almost. That was pretty awesome.
I wasn't, however, and I bet that more than 2% of her clients are like me. Which, if he means 2% of their clients are going there specifically because we mentioned it on the Weird Things podcast and want to write us reports, then I demand a cut, you snugging thieves.
You snuggest.
I want you to ask this person a follow-up question.
All right, I'll type a response right now.
All right. Just...
I am responding right now to John D. Hello, John. We are reading this.
John D. Bartholomew, who works at Hewlett-Packard in Rochester, New York. This
heir
is my
to
question.
The Kodak throne.
Some of us guys, and I say some of us, that doesn't mean that I'm including myself or excluding myself. It's just a theoretical notion. Sometimes we have trouble paying attention. Sometimes we etch things in our mind like the bird and the Flintstones chipping into stone.
Sure, it's a living.
For later.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying what the save it for later is, but some things you save for later.
Right.
I'd be curious to find out if...
Oh, if this was saved for later. Little mental snapshot, like, remember this? Remember the smell of that? Remember that moment that her hair accidentally brushed across my chest?
Kraftwerk was in the middle of 5 minutes into Autobahn, and she just snuggled a little bit closer to there, and next thing you know, you're like with the wildling woman on the edge of the cliff.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
I'm just curious. Did it arouse thoughts of an arousal nature later?
Well, it certainly, I mean, I guess it's all
at
context.
At which point, that is totally in my wheelhouse. That's totally in the 98%.
Wait, if you remember it later fondly?
And roll the dice?
That's
just
retroactive. No, your whole thing.
I remember later.
Yeah, you can't have retroactive motive. That was your whole thing. Was it was 98% motive was getting the grope on or whatever.
There was a waitress at TGI Fridays. I remembered later, Justin. What are you trying to say about
everybody,
that fine 98%
okay, of all people.
And if you went to her repeatedly every Friday night so you could look at her and graze the back of her hand as she put the check for your fudge sundae down, then I would say that you were doing it for an element of sexual gratification.
Caramel sundae, all right?
Especially if you come over, you start like... thinking about Jack Daniel's barbecue sauce, you start trying to replicate the smells. You're like, you got like a dummy set up there. You're like, well, yes, I will have the chicken fingers. Thank you for the suggestion.
So there we go. We have our
what
snuggery
a nice button
update.
You have on there,
man. I'll tell you what.
I feel like we should have these girls on.
I tell you, I was gonna suggest the same thing.
Oh yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Let's arrange for the Weird Things Inquisition.
We could just say,
we can all remember this conversation.
How do we explain what we're like? We're three grown men who have giggled and gossiped about your place of business for 3 months straight. We'd like you to come on our podcast and justify any accidental boner action.
I'm curious, I don't think that they're whores. Like, I don't think that they are running.
They're just gonna feel
phone call like that. Hey, listen, I don't think you're whores. So we have this podcast.
It's called Weird Things. And
Weird Things.
I mean, let's face it, you're weirdos, and we think what you do is weird, and we think everyone's going there.
There's sexual contact that I've decided, but that you're technically. Well, it depends on which definition.
It's complicated.
Anyhow,
you see, we call them B-dogs on the podcast, and we want you to come explain.
Exactly. Do you have a no B-dogs on the lawn policy?
Is there like three B-dogs and you're struck out?
Well, all right. Would you say that you've ever had a three B-dog night?
You have a policy about beating down the B-dog? It's like now we're coming on to them. Man.
All right.
So that's the snuggery.
That is awesome.
Andrew...
I want to thank John D. Hansen, who works at Office Depot at the Rochester Town Mall. this is what we need, guys. I mean, this show, Weird Things, it's a community, and we need you guys out there on the front lines. And sometimes it means, you know, going ball deep in the swamp looking for boa constrictors.
Wrong.
Sometimes it means, you know, going to the snuggery and taking one for the team.
Exactly.
Adopting a B-dog. Why not taking one for the team?
Yes, exactly. Going and almost taking one from the team, but instead awkwardly crossing your legs and then waddling on home. That's what it means sometimes.
All right. See you later. Got all the bee dogs out.
That was nice.
Andrew, you sent us a very interesting link.
Oh, my
today.
God. I need to figure out how to open this.
I've been doing research on my next writing project, and in doing research, sometimes research takes you in interesting places, but I've got a backstory to this, which I didn't tell you, Justin. I didn't tell you, Brian, okay?
Okay.
So just say, I'll get into what the research was specifically, but you ever like have an experience and independently you have some other, you know, somebody brings up something again, and you're like, oh, wow, why is this all of a sudden always coming up or whatever? Okay.
Yeah.
I was in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, and I went to this warehouse of a bunch of magic memorabilia, and it belongs to a person we'll call David, yes. Who works in the Las Vegas area.
Sure.
Okay. No idea who this could be.
When he's not on his place in the Caribbean.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's a foreigner, got a lot this of David. Magic, the most historic collection of magic you can imagine. And I had a quick tour before, but I got to go on the full tour of this. And Stan Allen is there with his wife. Stan Allen's a publisher of Magic Magazine. Norm Nielsen, legendary magician's there. Bill Smith, magic builder. And so I'm there, and a friend of mine's there. And so we got to tag along on the tour.
Sure.
And David's always been very kind to me. Tickets for the show, whatever. Justin and I have done some favors for him as far as getting stuff to his island and stuff. And
a few bodies had to be disposed of, no questions asked.
No, exactly. No. Yes, we had to move miracles for him. He's a man who deals in miracles.
But it's not like
I have this vision of David I am working on the ultimate trick, resurrection.
Where
many
I'm
failed attempts.
A call on New Year's Eve or whatever from him, like, hey, just wanted to. Not like he's just very polite, very, very cordial to me. Okay.
Sure.
So we go on this tour, and it's a several hour long tour of this museum. And along the way, he'll actually perform some magic and do some stuff, you know, as you see different parts of it. And it's how big is his collection? Let me put it this way. This is actually the literal truth. Charles Foster Kane's collection from Citizen, you know, that he had is inside of there. He's actually got Citizen Kane props inside of his magic.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
And next time you're in Vegas, Brian, I am sure they would love to show it to you. So don't forget that. Okay?
Dude, I will not. That's one of those things where, I would never think to ask, but you saying that makes me think I should ask.
Let me just say this. I've been running, how long? iTrick's been around for 6 years now. It's been,
been a while. Longer than that.
In the time that iTrick's been around, video of him either showing props from his collection or tours of his collection, which have periodically come out. I don't think I've ever seen the same prop twice.
Wow.
It is
humongous. It is. I could go on about that, but I'll get to the point anyway. So every now and then you come to a different room or whatever, and he shows off something, and he'll invite people to look at a prop, and it might be something Eugene Ribeiro Houdin had built hundreds of years ago. Okay. And you know, like I said, you know, he's always been, you know, polite towards me, treating me very, very well. But and it's not like, you know, we're high fiving buddies or whatever like that. You know, he's David. I'm me. Okay. So we go through the tour, and then we finally come to a room, and he's going to do another piece of magic for us, right? And he's part of the tour, and he does some magic relates to it. And there's several chairs there, and there's a couple women in the group. And he says, oh, you sit here, to this woman. She sits down, says, you sit here. And he has, Andrew, why don't you sit over here?
Nothing weird about that.
This alarm bell's going. All right, now I'm scared.
Because you were singled out by name. You weren't the conveniently located bipedal human.
He looks through the group and says, Andrew, why don't you sit over here? So already now I'm like, okay, David. This is my idol. This is a guy I wanted to be since I was 10 years old. Okay, this is my hero. And he says, sit down. And so I sit down.
Hold on. And by the way, there's like one person out there who doesn't know which David we're talking about. And for that one person.
And we're not going to tell them.
No, it's
suck it up.
It's David Copperfield. David Copperfield.
No, it's not.
So,
yes, it is.
So I'm sitting there in the chair, and he's doing this magic thing, and I want to get into it, because, they don't want to spoil, what happens in the museum tour or whatever. But I will do this. So he does this magic trick, and he does this sort of thing, and I'm sitting in this chair, and I'm watching, and I'm waiting to, what's going to happen, and then he does the trick, and then people clap, and I'm like, yeah, and then he gestures towards me, and then boom, my chair collapses, and I roll across the floor onto my ass.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I knew something was happening, and I'm like, thank God I'm only falling on my ass.
Right.
And so yep. I go sprawling on the floor. Everybody's hysterically laughing at me, and I get up, and I'm like, I'm just so relieved that I'm alive. You know? I was thinking it could be far worse or whatever.
He's like, and so, and Andrew, you have Ebola. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, exactly. So,
just to put into context, and you guys as magicians, the David Copperfield is basically like George Washington walking around in the magic field. It's
He's
basically like he's a living legend in this art, and the fact that he is there and still like a human being you can talk to and not just this venerable titan that will live for centuries is a very prescient thing.
And so Washington invites you to the White House, and there's the dinner before you, and you're like, hey, please have a seat. And you go to, and he pulls the chair out for you. And you're like, oh, this is awesome. And you sit down, and Washington whips that chair away, and you fall on your ass. Yeah.
And then Thomas Jefferson laughs at you, and John Adams is making rude gestures.
And you're like,
Ben Franklin's making fart noises in his armpit.
They chose you.
You're like, I'm so honored. Thank you, George Washington.
So he's got this chair, and this chair, he had some props. He was on an episode of Conan a long time ago, and he showed some of these different things that he had, and they were specially made things. They're antiques designed for hazing, and one of them is this chair that you get some dumb sucker like me to sit down in, and then you pull a release on it. And it was Kenner, by the way, who pulled the release. It wasn't Copperfield's magical powers, I found out later on. Pull the release, and you go falling on your butt. So...
Now, when you read that there's a whole, an industry of hazing, like, that sounds horrible, but, like, sounded like you had an awesome time, and it sounded like...
a great time. I mean, that was a highlight. it was like a friend of mine, got shoved his face into the wall when Frank Sinatra walked through a walkway, and all he could say is, I met Sinatra, you think about this, like this hazing chair, and you're like, okay, that's kind of cool. And, doing some research on another book and looking up all sorts of means of torture and soft torture and hazing and stuff, I came across, and I had to send this to Brian and Justin, the most awesome catalog ever conceived. And basically, it's something that, like, the Freemasons would use and fraternities would use, and it's from 1930, and it's a place where you could buy all sorts of devices. This chair that I was in is in the catalog.
Oh, that's great. Okay. De Moulin Brothers and Company.
All right. And so, can you give me an example? You see inside of there, there's a thing called the Trick Camera and Surprise Chair. And it starts off where it says, they have this description. You see a guy with a camera and some guy sitting in the chair that I was in. And the guy with the camera has the shroud that goes over him. And then the guy is sitting in the chair and he thinks that he's going to be posing for a photograph. And the next panel shows this camera squirting water in the guy's face and then the chair dropping out from underneath him.
Oh, my God.
And they have the whole description of, it is perfectly natural for Lodge to want the candidate's picture to keep on file for identification or for advertising in case he should show up missing. Now, these lodges are your Masonic lodges.
Yeah.
But if the candidate knows how near he is to his downfall, quotes, he might have a suspicion that his picture's intended for the rogues gallery. And so it's like, and it goes on to describe all of these things. You've got the thing called the bomb stunt, okay? And it's this bomb that you roll near somebody or show somebody that blows up, but it's merely just a blank cartridge, okay?
Oh, is that merely what it is? Is merely a gunpowder report attacks him out of nowhere.
So the writing is, the harmless though highly exciting ceremony will not encourage the Bolshevik spirit or the bomb throwing habit, which in the 1930s was a real thing to be worried about. On the contrary, it'll teach the candidate not to fool the bombs and infernal machines. So basically, it's a gag where they think you're going to get blown up by a bomb.
Oh my God, that sounds awesome.
LOL.
Dude, why can't we go back to, I mean, I don't know. Everything's made of plastic these days.
By the way, no, wait, hold on. Wait, go back, because you were showing one earlier for the live viewers, but the airplane one.
Yeah.
Whiz-bang airplane. Where, yes, wherein basically you trick your friend into saying, hey, I bought a Wright Brothers style airplane.
A flying vehicle, lighter than air or heavier than air flight as possible with my whiz-bang airplane. And then
you put them in there and then it like explodes.
But look at the look on their face. Go on, man.
They have $125 back then, but you know.
Was it $125? That's like blowing $1,500 today. Maybe even more, $5,000.
Here's the description. It's an aeroplane, A-E-R-O plane with rubber tires, fireproof compartment in which firecrackers are fired.
Dude, none wrong with that. How much would $125 nowadays be?
The seat is wired for electricity, too.
Finally. Because if there's one thing that's, you can really heighten this sense of plummeting to the ground in a shoddy airplane, it's also having vaults of electricity channeled right into your butt.
Most of these things work that in some way. They have like a foam that electrocutes you, but like my favorite, every new one I read is my favorite one. And so here's drinking the goat's blood. And so you have everybody gather around this big, big, huge, large metal vessel, right? And all sorts of horrible things are thrown in there. You put in whiskey, and then you throw in, you know, just mud. People start spitting in there. And then you make the pledge, go take their cup and go over to the spigot at the end of it and pour himself a drink and drink from it.
This is brilliant!
And what it is, it's a secret compartment there, so they're not actually drinking the horrible stuff. But you can imagine, you know, this is the catalog description of what they're putting in there. What are you actually seeing people do to this thing? Probably is only available on German internet sites.
Oh my God. That's wow, it took me a second to realize your reference there. The Trader's Judgment Stand is the Trader's Stand. It's I guess a stand with a collapsible it stands you about 2 feet up, and then at some point you flip
so imagine
lever.
Imagine you were to say, oh, congratulations, pledge, you've done so well in all the previous things that we're giving you the gold medal for pledging. And you put them up on like a gold medal podium stand, and then it's a false floor, so they fall to the ground.
They have the balloon ascension. Did you see this?
No.
So here's what the prospective pledge is told. They're put on a blindfold. And they say, listen, you know, we have a balloon out front, and you're going to have to hang on to the rope and hold on to it until it comes back down. It's dark outside, right?
Right.
So you put on the blindfold, you grab the rope, and all of a sudden you're lifted off the ground, and you feel yourself being carried higher and higher and higher. And then you hear, like, maybe the sound of the balloon on fire, and the rope becomes really, really hot, and there's nothing more you can do. All you can do is, in quote, he lets go thinking it's all over. So you make them think that they're about to die, and the only solution they have is to let go and plummet to their death, right?
This is the greatest catalog ever created.
To his great surprise and unspeakable joy, he's caught in a net. And what it is it's done indoors. There's a pulley up on the roof, and then below them is they're hoisted up. When they're standing there, there's a net underneath them, and they're hoisted up into the air, and the net is below them.
I'll tell you what, man. If you deal with somebody who's convinced that the Masons are all the Illuminati controlling the world, all you got to do is hand them this catalog and be like, this is what the Masons are up to.
Yes.
You think they're running the world?
Toilet tanks.
They're busy trying to make everyone crap their pants or trick them into unintentional bee dogs.
And frankly, like, well, you know, Brian, if we had the opportunity to do this to people every single night, to hell with running the world, I would just want to do things. The human centipede.
What? The human centipede?
Human centipede or nightmare, and you see four guys straddling a giant centipede demon bug that's over their shoulders, and it starts off, did you ever have a nightmare? Well, if you did, you can sympathize with the candidates who are compelled to ride this animal. A nightmare, as in, you know, like horse, or an old day horse, for that matter, is not one or two, three compared to this wild and woolly centipede. And so, basically, it's this big centipede you straddle, and it looks like, yes, their asses are being electrocuted.
At any desired time, he can shoot the, quote, animal heat, end quote, into the candidates and make the mare go in a way that will terrify them.
It's as if, you know, everyone's like, well, you know, we could always have that meeting about rigging the presidential election, or we could figure out a way to work an electrode up Johnson's anus again.
Wait, look at the photos. The guy second from the right, like Hitler. And that's probably like, you know, Goebbels or something leading it. You know, they look like it's like a bunch of brown shirts for a meeting.
What I like is that everything has a package to go with it. For example, you've got the baby bouncer for use with electric carpet. So the baby bouncer is just a swing attached to some, you know, I guess a spring fed there or some kind of elastic. And you just bounce up and down off of an electrified grid.
By the way, for the record, none of the people in these diagrams look like young men. Like, these are not like young fraternity hazings. They're all like drawings of guys in their 30s and 40s, like businessmen.
Hoping they're going to get, you know, they're 10 years into the company, hoping they're going to get that raise so they can tell the wife they can put the down payment on the house and have their kid.
Yes, but first I have to go shove this up my butt.
And they've got an electric stretcher. Let's say somebody panics or falls down injured from having been hazed. You put them on the stretcher, and you can continuously electrocute them.
Oh, here we go. This guy looks like he's having a lot of fun doing the molten lead test as two gentlemen grab him from each side, forcing him towards a brazier with what surely has molten lead inside. And then what's the method in there? Is it like gallium in there instead?
I don't know. Read the Charleston.
Our dry
girls.
Mercurine powder is so it's got is much cheaper than liquid mercury. So basically, you add this powder and you it makes. I guess you add water and it looks like mercury. It's shiny and looks like molten lead. And so look at the horror on this guy's face as two dudes force him to stick his hand in molten lead.
Justin, read the Charleston girls for us and describe the photo.
All right, here. Yeah, pull it up there.
There we go. The Charleston girls, again, looks like it uses the electric blanket, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Go ahead and put it down there. I'm going to read it off your screen.
All right, go.
Charleston girls, tall ones, short ones, thin ones, and fat ones, all dressed up and ready to go. They are the clinging vine type, the fellow that draw them and are sure to step high, wide, and handsome. The girls are built up like old-fashioned rag dolls. The arms are attached around the shoulders, and the feet are attached to the feet of the dancer. Use them on a large electric carpet. No instructions necessary to the lounge lizard that draws one. They are a scream!
I mean, I guess this is just a dummy that you make people dance with on an electric carpet! And it's not even like they're just phoning this in. They're just like, whatever. I don't know. Something.
I like peanut butter and jelly. I like toast. I like toast.
Oh, my gosh. And I love these encouraging testimonials that people give. The paraphernalia we received from you is all right. We currently have had a good time with them, and all the members are anxious to use them. The articles all work good, and we were well pleased with them. We are having a larger attendance at the lodge, and I think the paraphernalia is a benefit to the lodge. Jake Brensing, clerk, Camp 5190, MWA, Hudson, Kansas.
By the way, they're still talking about that night in Hudson, Kansas.
Here's the devil has him on the run. Here is where the candidates have a devil of a time. If they ever question the existence of a satanic majesty, I love that. If they ever question the existence of a satanic majesty, as in, you know,
as one does at many of our gatherings,
their doubts will fly, and they too will fly when the devil suddenly and unexpectedly rushes in on him. He makes his presence felt in a way that convinces the candidates this is something else besides a wild goose chase. In his desire, the candidates have the joy of anticipation. The devil might announce his presence by showing his head through a curtain at the door. So you get a devil costume, including head tights, fork tail, and, of course, a portable jump spark battery, which is concealed in the hump on the back.
Of course you do.
Brian, you got to go back to the dog show stunt.
Dude, the dog show stunt's pretty great.
The coolest things ever. So basically, here's what happens, folks. You go ahead and you get all these pledges. Who, again, I just to paint the picture in your mind's eye, these are 37-year-old men that are pictured in these things. And you make them all get into these little dog houses with dog faces on them, and you tell them to bark like dogs. So basically what you see initially is just a bunch of like cardboard dog houses and all various different dog faces that are barking. Unbeknownst to them, they're on an electric carpet.
It's what I love is the double whammy. You're like, oh, I get it. You're going to embarrass me to make me dress like a dog and sit in this doghouse, and we're all going to pretend to be dogs. And then you crank it up to 11 with just some 220 volts.
And this is how it reads.
Wait, oh, go back. Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Here we go. Hark, hark. The dogs do bark. Take it from us. When this show is put on, the dogs will not only bark and howl, but there will be the doggone scramble you've ever saw. And the kennels will not hold the dogs. Try this stunt. It's a howler.
Man, I'm sort of disappointed because I used to be like vaguely scared of Masonic lodges. And I feel like if this is the pamphlet to serve what they want, then it's like, this is what we do. We're a Masonic lodge.
Here's the one we need to understand. Under the title, Jewish and Swiss Naval Battle.
Oh, my God.
This catalog from 1930, the horrific, horrific tragedy that was about to befall the Jewish people had not yet happened, although, you know, things were starting to stir in Europe and the sentiment, obviously, a prevalent here. All the thrills of a canoe tilting contest right in your hall. The boats run in casters and are liable to go in almost any direction, which makes it no simple matter for the tilters to maintain their equilibrium. The sides of the canoes are low to prevent the participants from falling too hard.
Always
so
looking out for
two guys
you.
In a canoe in the middle of the floor with staffs with balls on either end and two guys like pushing the canoes and they're just bashing each other in the face.
Man.
And the winner gets latkes and watches.
Yes.
Let me just say this. There's an added element to us going through all these for me because I don't know if Andrew might know, but I don't know if I ever told Brian, but my father, Charles Oscar Young, was indeed a Mason.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Now all I can think is what antiquated, vaguely homoerotic butt electrocution he went through.
Well, wait, Justin, it's not all electric. I need you to read the Hula Hula Bull Dance.
Hula Hula Bull Dance, coming right up. Here it is right here. Oh, this is very classy. You got a bunch of overweight gentlemen approaching 40s, all wearing grass skirts. And we hear
a novel stunt that is a whole show in itself can be worked up with this outfit. It consists of tuned cowbells that hang between the legs of the candidates, well up to the crunch, and appropriate costumes. The operator uses a bull prod to play the bells. Each candidate represents a certain note and dances when prodded by the director, thus producing his note. There are 10 bells representing 10 notes, including F sharp, B flat, making it possible to play many simple airs, How Dry I Am, etc.
Oh, my God. I can't guess which I like better. The fact that they're so excited to show off that it has, you know, those popular notes, F sharp and B flat, in case you were afraid they weren't be in there. But then also the fact that the song is How Dry I Am.
Well Up in the Crotch.
$76.
Which is actually the name of my debut album.
That's amazing.
We'll put a link to this. There's so many. I mean, I keep looking through here, and there's more and more and more delightful things.
Yeah, the URL, I'll read it real quick right here. PhoenixMasonry.org/MasonicMuseum/Demoulin, DEMOULIN, has the whole thing on there. And this thing is 150 pages or so, and everyone is just amazing. The photos are awesome.
You'll find the delights of the pie table, the ice cream table, and they have at least 5 different stunts involving mechanical goats.
Look at this. And at the very end, they have the sashes for the Masonic Marshals, silver or gold trimmed. Like they just put this total polish.
By the way, there was one that you found that, Andrew, you loved the title for. We should probably read the Fuzzy Wonder Goat.
Oh, yes.
The Fuzzy Wonder Goat. Here we go. The Fuzzy Wonder Goat is coming up, the fuzzy one. What the hell am I looking at? You got a top half of a goat attached to some kind of tricycle-looking contraption with some pedals, I guess?
And it starts with a Rudyard Kipling quote.
Kipling wrote, "The female of the species is more deadly than the male. If judged from this viewpoint, the fuzzy wonder must be a she-goat instead of a he-goat." While it might appear ridiculous to attempt to establish any relationship between Fuzzy Wonder and the wild western bronco, yet our suspicion is confirmed by the fact that the bronco is tame compared with this goat.
Imagine a mechanical bull, but a goat.
On wheels that goes around in circles.
It's pushed around.
And I guess somebody grabs this handle and kind of goes up and down and it bucks you?
You sit on it, and then somebody pushes you around, and it tries to buck you off of the goat.
Oh, man.
Yeah, by the way, spilling you what looks to be about 4 feet onto surely tile floor.
The rollicking Mustang goat.
Don't worry. It's a carpet. An electric carpet.
Carpet. Now, bark like a dog, and make sure you spread your cheeks so it gets your butt good.
So here's the submarine, which you get into, and wait for it. It looks like this 7-foot-tall wheel contraption in which there's a little kayak-looking thing that you get into, but then they push you forward, it flips you upside down, and of course, gunpowder goes off.
Of course. Why wouldn't it go off? If somebody's not getting electrocuted, then damn it, gunpowder's blowing up.
You know, by the way, all of this, pre-cable. Just saying.
Pre-internet, for sure. Oh, there it is, the trick bottom chair. Is this the one you were in?
Yeah, I was actually in the one that was in the camera. They had the trick and surprise chair, but it's kind of the same effect.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Kind of looks like me there, actually.
To me, I just can't get over just how, like, weirdly, like it really is like this weird kind of John Waters movie. Like like John Waters would option this catalog and make an entire movie out of
I'll tell you what, like I was going to make some comment about how this whole catalog should be just a movie in and of itself. Then I realized that there's somebody here who I could just say, make a movie out of this. So Andrew, make a movie out of this book because I would watch the hell out of it.
Working on it.
Birdcage.
All right. Well, there we go. We'll have a link to this in the show notes on weirdthings.com. But I think it's about time, boys, that do you want to go over our predictions from 2011 before we make our predictions for 2012?
Yeah, just two things. One, I got to say that this catalog, the only explanation I have for it is the three of us somehow time traveled back to 1930 and we put our collective heads together and I'm like, let's make a transistor. And Brian's like, how do we do that? I'm like, damn it. ran through all the microwave. How does it work? I don't know. And then we're like, how about a spring and a blasting cap, and you pee your pants because it looks like a goat that just kicked you in the ass. Yes, this we can build.
I'm like, does it involve an electric carpet?
Yeah, this was our entire contribution to technology was we invented all these horrific pranks for Masonic Lodge members.
I would be okay with that for the record.
Oh, yeah, imagine how many of those like run on the electric carpet. That, like the first guy who did the prototype for the electric carpet and showed it to the catalog owner, he's like, Johnson, you're a genius.
How would you like to be the guy that works there, the newest guy there? Like, hey, we got a new thing on a test.
And we're like, well, this is our flying aeroplane. Wait, seriously? We sell a flying aeroplane? Yes. Yeah. Would you like to go for a spin? I can fly. You're telling me I can fly? Really? Amazing.
Worst internship in history. I get school credit for this still, right?
Why do I keep falling for it?
It doesn't matter.
Amazing. Yeah, dude, let's hear our predictions from last year.
All right. Well, last year, we all made our predictions about 2012. We will start in the order that we read them.
I have no memory of them, by the way.
Here is Andrew made. So, Andrew, you don't remember what your prediction was?
Not a clue.
Here we go. This is Andrew's.
The iPad Mini.
Here's Andrew's prediction.
Commercially available 3D printers under $1,000 that you would be able to go to, much like you'd be able to go and finish commercial 3D printers under $1,000.
Now, this is I don't think that's true yet, or I haven't heard that. But I'll tell you what I have heard is, do you know that MakerBot opened up a retail location right here in Austin? And what you can do is you could go in and step into. They have a chamber that just does a chook, and it takes pictures. And then you can get a bust of yourself made and sent out to you. High resolution little miniature bust of your own face.
Yes. So, there's actually a couple under $1,000 3D printers now.
Woo! There are?
You've got the Solid Doodle, which is actually $499. It looks kind of more like a garage thing. The Athena, which is a $1,500 one, but there's the you can buy from the Chinese manufacturers now. They have several of them that are under 1,000, and they're kind of knockoffs of the MakerBot, et cetera, or one of the open source projects.
So there we go. I mean, that your big point was that if you looked, I think there was a big Kickstarter for a fully assembled, or I guess it was partially assembled at home 3D printer that got about $800,000 in Kickstarter funding, and that there would be more and more entrepreneurial money going into it, and we would begin to see the beginnings of the off the rack fully assembled sub $1,000. 3D printing
and I would say the nicer ones are still over 1,000. Like, but you got the Cubify, which is 1,300. So we certainly broke the $1,000 barrier. I don't know if that's, you know, I think you're still, I think the ones that are that do the real work are still more than that.
Can I tell you that my daughter Penelope asks me at least once a week, like I don't know if she asks me or just comments on it. Like, she sincerely cannot wait until we can afford a 3D printer. And she talks about it all the time. And it occurred to me, she's 8 years old right now, so the odds are good that sometime in the next 4 years, the price will get down low enough and we may find ourselves in a position to get one. She is so techie and geeky that she, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, will be able to marvel and describe a time like, oh, I remember getting our first 3D printer.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
the MakerBot? And just like
us talking about playing Oregon Trail on the Apple II.
Right, or pre-internet, right? Like, we could say, oh, I remember when I heard of this thing called the internet. And our parents, when they can remember getting a television, you know, it's like this is going to be one of those landmark moments that's going to define society from that point forward.
Yeah.
All right, Brian,
the solid doodle, by the way, looks actually, the resolution looks pretty good on that.
Right on. So let me hear it.
Do you have any guess on what yours was?
I heard it had something to do with space.
It was space related.
Yeah, I'm probably going to, I don't know. Go ahead. What is it?
In 2012, we will discover an Earth-sized planet in the Goldilocks zone. Because we've had the one, we've had the other. We found planets in the Goldilocks zone.
There we go.
Didn't that happen?
I don't think so.
We haven't had the Earth size in the Goldilocks, but we've had Goldilocks planets. We've had Earth like that are like twice the mass of Earth. But your prediction, though, I mean, scientists are confident within the next 12 months we are going to have the Earth size type in there.
Well, and I remember the headline being it must have been like 3 or 4 weeks ago, being like, you know, a possible other Earth, where it's like it was definitely more massive than Earth, but it was in the Goldilocks zone and it appeared to have liquid water. I think was the big mm-hmm. news, right? There were signs of that. I'm calling that a win. That's close enough. That's at least as close as Andrew's $1,000 3D printer.
I think so. I will give you guys both check marks, and I will say that
if I may disagree for a moment, there is a $500 commercially available printer right now you can buy.
Yeah, but I think
there is not a Earth-sized Goldilocks planet,
but
in the books.
But I'm going to say this: I'm pretty sure you could have bought one for under $1,000 a year ago today. I'm pretty sure you were making a prediction on something that had already happened by that point.
I don't think outside of the not to my knowledge.
I mean, well, all right. I mean, you certainly could build, well, all right.
Well, Brian, don't worry, because you at least swung bravely and missed, if even just nearly, because there is increasing certainty. I pulled quite a double play, ladies and gentlemen, as mine was both hilariously boring and safe and also wrong.
Let me hear it.
As we have the last two elections see a dramatic increase in direct communication via YouTube and Twitter and Facebook specifically from candidates to campaigns. We're going to see that's going to be the place where things are going to shift more than, let's say, a flub on the campaign trail or something like that. You're going to see more candidates, whoever comes out of the Republican primary and Barack Obama, managing their message directly to their people far more.
Now, you know what? That's very prescient, Justin, because I can't remember any time in this past election that either campaign focused on a single flub or made a lot of hay over a single remark that was off the cuff. And I do remember all the times that people got on there and directly spoke to their constituencies to make things right.
Well, I think
can I say, though, I will I will defend an aspect of that very, very dry, boring, obvious.
For the record, Andrew did loudly snore after
I think that we did see this year, though, is we saw that, you know, all the, they would make commercials, they'd not even buy TV time for them. It would be the straight to YouTube with the commercial. Yeah. And then if it tested well on YouTube, then they'd go buy time for it, which was kind of a very interesting sort of strategy to say, how does this play? Like, oh, it didn't play well, forget about it. Here's another one. Because the idea that sometimes a YouTube commercial that really hits will be seen more times than a TV one, which is a fascinating phenomenon.
Well, and of course you have the aspect where it's like, even if they never really release it, if it just appears on YouTube and it's outrageous in the right ways, then all the 24-hour news stations will run with it and play the hell out of it as a news.
Oh, item. Yeah. And who can forget Herman Cain's
his awesome creepy smile.
Although, like, really, I do just need to eat two fistfuls of poop on the fact that I said that the direct connection between candidate and constituency would trump any possible flub on the campaign trail, which thanks to Jimmy Carter's grandson proved hilariously wrong.
All right, I'll go first on making predictions for this year. And I don't know if this is a... It's probably less a prediction and more just a fingers crossed, like, here's what I really hope happens. But you guys have heard about this comet that, if it threads the stone needle just right, will be brighter, allegedly brighter than the full moon at the end of the year in 2013. That's if it doesn't, you know, hit the wrong gravity pockets. I'm making up science. No. Like if it doesn't swing too close to X, Y, or Z and break
apart. I've played Angry Bird Space. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Brighter than the full moon. I'm going to find the actual article here. Planet comet coming in 2013, ISON, ISON, may appear brighter than the full moon as it passes the Earth. Man, I want that to happen. I'm just going to say that'll be my prediction, is it will be the most remarkable celestial event in any of our lifetimes to date. You know, because I saw Halley's Comet when I was a kid, and it was like, it was all right. I saw Hale Bopp when it was going by. I was like, all right. But, like, if this thing's brighter than the full effing moon, this would be more impressive than watching, you know, video of that one comet smashing into Jupiter. Brighter than the full moon? That would be, that's my prediction, is that it will pull it off and be awesome.
Then we'll get dragons.
Yes, it will be a red comet. That would be all right, too.
Yeah. Andrew?
Okay. All right. Prediction. So those of you that follow SpaceX on their Twitter feed and their you subscribe to their email updates, they released footage, which actually made the news, of a test of the Grasshopper system, which is actually the first stage of the Falcon 9 rocket using one engine. They actually released footage showing it going up 130 feet and then landing back again. And this is a 10-story tall rocket that did 130 feet in the air, then landed back down. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that may have been the largest mass ever done with a rocket vertical takeoff and landing. It may probably up there. If not, it is. Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' company, is testing their single-stage to orbit rocket. They had a blow-up, but they're still doing some exciting stuff, and we're in a very exciting period of that. I think, you know, Elon Musk has said with this rocket that it's very likely they will make some craters in trying to test this, but we've talked about before, a fully reusable rocket brings space industry, space travel, to the same level as air travel. Instead of having to, you know, lose a spacecraft every time you launch, you get to reuse it. So every time you wanted to go on an airplane trip, they had to destroy the plane at the end of the trip.
Or at least part of the plane. Like we should mention, for those who missed our previous episodes where we talked about it, the idea is, and I forget, is it Dragon? No, it's not Dragon. Which is the final name of the project, the multi-stage where each one comes back?
It'll be built into the Falcon systems.
Falcon systems, right. But the idea is that it would go up, and each of the three stages would, just as we just watched for the live viewers, you know, we saw the Grasshopper land Buck Rogers style right back where it took off from. Each stage would go back home to be refueled in order to do
right.
that over and over
again. And the cool thing about that is that way you get a slightly higher mass to orbit than you know, you would if you tried it. You could, you're trying to do whole one whole rocket. It's just there's probably not enough space left over to actually put anything into orbit. So it's a complicated technological thing that nobody even thought about publicly 3 years ago trying. And now SpaceX has a rocket lifting 100 feet off the launch pad and landing back Buck Rogers style. They're a long ways off before they go to Cape Canaveral and say, let's have our first stage return and our second stage return. But I'm going to say what they plan on doing and what I think the reaction to it will be. We may see in 2013 them actually sending a first stage supersonic, take off from the pad, hit supersonic velocities, then come back down and launch back on a pad. That's part of the development process, is you reach a point where they then, before they decide, let's send the whole rocket up, we have to touch this thing.
Now, the significance of going supersonic is what? That it takes less fuel to get you up to orbit if you can get faster?
Oh, I mean, it's showing that this thing can go break the sound barrier and go and high up into the atmosphere, go high up without blowing apart into a bunch of billion pieces, and then landing back down where it took off from.
Right.
So that's one of the things they want to try to do within the next 12 months, perhaps, is to go supersonic with that thing you saw. Not just ridiculously high up and then land, which itself, when we see this thing fly out of view, then come back and land, big moment. When we find out this thing went supersonic and then landed back onto the pad, craters may occur, but when that happens, I think you're going to see a lot of people, the entire space industry, NASA, all of a sudden say, let's think about space differently now, because it's not a matter of if it can be happened. It's a matter of when it will happen, when we have real, rapidly reusable three-stage or multi-stage rockets. And I think what's going to happen from that point is that you're going to get this change in direction in the way we're looking at the space industry. I think that some of the other ideas we've been talking about, some of the NASA rocket programs, the SLS system and all that, I expect that we're going to see, if this happens, there's going to be a massive, we need to retrain the way we're looking at things, because we can own space now if we follow through on this.
So, okay. What's
your 2013 benchmark?
Yeah.
What happens before New Year's Eve on 2013 with that plan?
I think you're going to see the major U.S. competitor is United Launch Alliance. I think you're going to see them make an announcement for something that is going to be a very SpaceX-like reusable technology, because they realize they're going to be losing that, you know, domestically, the space battle. I think you're going to see NASA come out with a new man in space program based around the idea of this, and may not be something that goes to a vote yet, but you're going to see a proposal or things like that float around. I think you're going to see the Chinese government and other people try to adopt. You're going to see things that look like SpaceX type rockets as they try to catch up with this, because if SpaceX does this, this is a huge light year leap ahead of where everybody else is in the space industry. This is a thing, you know, people right now go, we've done it. Well, when a rocket goes up, goes supersonic, then launches back on the pad, nobody's done that.
And that's it.
By the way, space announcements throughout history, an all-time Hall of Fame presidential, hey, look over there, announcement to make throughout the history since Kennedy and the space race. Whenever a president can walk up to a podium and say, hey, look at this space plan, it's always, they love to do it, and they love it, especially when there's other things that they probably don't want to talk about, especially in second terms when things are a little harder to get done.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, so what about you, Justin? Since you tied space to politics, is this another political prediction?
No, not another political one. Here we go. Technology, 2013, and I'll make full admission, I'm stealing this completely and wholeheartedly from Brett Rounds.
I'm sorry. This is a crazy ass shark going across.
Crazy ass shark floating around. 2013 is the year that the phone leaves our pocket, specifically either in a watch or in some other kind of place to wear it. But we now no longer, there will be feature phones either from Apple or other companies where you won't have anything in your pocket. You will, and it won't just be like a Bluetooth connection to your watch. Your watch will be your phone.
Man, that just
we need to, because like I'm sure there have been like cell phone watches. How do you say, are you going to say that like Samsung or Apple will market said device?
Yes. I think it will be. I'll put it to Samsung or Apple, but I think that the idea that the phone doesn't always have to live in your pocket, you know, or it doesn't have to live always in your purse, that you can wear a phone that won't just be a gimmick. It'll be something that works.
We'll have a really robust signal, and it'll be like this big. And yes. Then you can like just set it on the counter and then pick it up and take a call.
See, I don't know. I guess there are so many inherent problems like that. Like, we're so close with smartphones to having them be where we want to be, but we still don't like the battery quality and we still don't like the signal strength. So if you're gonna reduce the form factor even farther and not have, like, it makes a lot more sense to have a wristwatch Bluetooth connection where it's like the phone's in your pocket, but you never take it out of your pocket because it does everything through the wristwatch interface. Otherwise, you complicate the biggest problem of the antenna and the battery as well. So I don't know. I'm not saying. I mean, you know, that's the nice thing about predictions is you could stuff it exactly. In my face later.
The problem with the Dick Tracy wristwatch phone was. You know, how do you like, hey, what's going on? You know, you got to put it to your ear or it comes off. And there's been designs for things that snap off like things. And then we have the little Bluetooth thing, which, you know, the only reason people who wear Bluetooth now are cab drivers and drug dealers. So,
yeah, I would think it would be that it would still be a headset operated thing, mm-hmm. but there would be a Bluetooth headset in the earliest phases of it. But I just think, you know, I mean, like how far... Are we, you know, really from an iPhone 5 in terms of the lightness of material, and especially if let's say it's not like a cloth band, or I mean if it's like we have solid banded watches now, you know, like how far off are we from taking this and giving it a big enough screen that it's functional and having that be.
I think that totally will be the case, and there will be a wrist is a great interface location, and I think the size would be just fine and the functionality. I think yes to wristwatch and us using our wristwatch as though it's the phone, but no more is this monitor and this keyboard and this mouse my computer than would this wristwatch be the phone. I feel like there it makes too much sense to put a giant. A large size mass of computing power and battery backup and antenna, everything that's going to drain everything, to have that be separate. And I have to apologize because normally we do a radio silence thing where we close all chat rooms and close all tweets. But because,
except for Brian, who never closes the chat room.
But normally I never look. But this time my eye snuck over and I saw somebody suggest, and I love this idea, what if your CPU was a big old belt buckle? That was just right up in front, like a brick. And then it didn't matter. Then you didn't need
nothing. What if those of us who aren't married realize we will never get married now? Nerd fashion.
I'll tell you what, I'm okay with that.
Here's a thought. I love the idea of it leaving our pocket. And you know, one of the problems of Bluetooth is Bluetooth looks stupid. You know, you got this thing here. And I had a Bluetooth, and I'm like this. I'm like, well, do I leave it in, and then I make it look like I'm on a call and all this? There was a weird social thing. The technology was still a bit of a battery drain, but we'll get to that point where you're going to be able to reduce the phone to something that size. Are we going to see something like I had a chance to – you ever use one of those earwigs, those things you
have,
put inside
I have,
there?
In fact, part of me wanted to run downstairs and run up just so I could show it on camera. Like 6-7 years ago, I saw a listing from some Russian website for $300 that you could get one of those in-ear things. And what it was a hearing aid style in-ear device, and it's a little beige thing with like three micro hearing aid batteries in it, and it had a little protrusion that looked like a hair. It was like a mm-hmm. monofilament line in order to get, because it went so deep in your ear canal. And then what you wore is it had an induction loop that you wore underneath your shirt as a kind of a short range antenna, and on it like a pendant in front was a spliced together Motorola headpiece and that you paired with the Bluetooth for your phone, and you could go around it. Like my problem was it was never loud enough or consistent enough, and
there,
the battery died.
Brian, the modern version of that now,
yeah,
it's just the piece and then a transmitter that can be 20-30 feet away or more.
Dude, how much are those? Where can I get them?
I don't know. I had a friend that showed me one of those. I got to try. It was amazing. So that's how advanced that is now. And so you take that and then you say, what if it's a little bit bigger and you got hearing aid technology, which has come along a long ways, and you have something that's a little, you know, silent little thing that, you know, a little quiet, I mean, you know, thing that's, you know, we now, like, you use the flesh-colored microphones and the things like that.
Sure.
I think we start seeing somebody says, listen, there's a practical thing to having the thing always here, but let's make it lightweight. Let's not make it look like it's a piece of bling. And maybe it's controlled from the watch. At that point, when you satisfy my question of how do I talk into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, like, that is, like, the idea of having your watch communicate, like, with the phone seems like the thing I want today. Like, I would love to have that, like, today. But I think the next big step, I mean, if we look at, you know, now the form factors of phones are going in such interesting different directions. They're either getting super smaller and super lighter without sacrificing battery quality, or now we've seen in 2012, we saw, you know, kind of the continuing ballooning of the phone sizes with, like, the Note and stuff like that, and people, even the iPhone, getting stretched out further to give more real estate. But there's just something to, like, what is the evolution of the iPod mini wristwatch idea? Like where does that go? Because that's not feeding from somewhere else. That's its own thing with its own connection. And, like, how powerful would a device like that be? And maybe it's not the phone. Maybe it's more of an iPod Touch or something like that, where we just have a super high powered internet enabled device,
yeah,
that's on our
pretty safe bet, because I can't remember, it might have even been on this podcast, but I've heard that that is one of the top priorities in the secret labs over at Apple. Is that's,
well, there's a rumor, but I don't know if that's credible,
the rumor being,
they also said that Intel was working on the chipset or whatever.
sure, but specifically what gives credence to the rumor is the fact that that Apple very intentionally, everyone saw that Nano, loved it, started building ways to put it on their wrist, and then Apple very intentionally remakes the Nano in a very unfriendly form factor for putting on your wrist, as if to draw back intentionally and preserve this space for them to come in and dominate later.
Well, but they'd also released the interfaces with, like, the wristwatch, but the new
Nano now plays video, which it didn't do before, and they had to do that increased functionality.
Right.
I mean, they're happy to displace their own technology, I can't pretend to know what their motives are beyond just selling products that make money.
Right.
But I would love, I mean, I don't know. I just think that now also, the more I thought about it when me and Brett were talking about it, like, it just feels ripe for someone to really take the cell phone and kind of give it, you know, the next kick.
I think the missing factor there is if you have a technology that gets rid of the screen, and, you know, we saw, you know, the war between Apple and Google, between, like, voice enabling stuff. Yeah. Where Siri does some things really well, then she does some things very comically. And the Google voice technology system, it doesn't have the same kind of AI for trying to understand more ambiguous
context
stuff.
Right.
But when it does understand, it's fantastic and fast, and the Google stuff is amazing. And I think that's a thing that it was 10 years ago, that's what I wanted, was the audio internet, the idea that you put the thing in your ear, and I say, call Justin Young, and I don't hear, get call Justin Young.
yeah. I'll tell you what, man. You made me think about the next level of the earwigs and stuff. Like, I would shell out $1,200 right now if I could get a pair of glasses that had battery juice in them, that had the microphone and a little clicker on there, and I would wear those earwigs all day long, and
I'm surprised Google hasn't set you up with the Google Glass yet. You'd be the perfect guy to be testing that for them.
I am too. Let's get on that. Everyone, tweet. Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to Colleen's for New Year's Eve. I'll yell at people.
There you go. Good. Make that happen.
Because I mean, you'd be the guy that like you're not just a nerd who sits in front of a computer. You go out on the road, you do shows, you're out there in an active real life outside of just an office environment. You would be like the perfect guy for them to set up with one of those things. It's like, I have so many mixed feelings about that thing, but I would love to see somebody like you who has a grown-up job. Well, I mean, you don't do grown-up stuff on stage, but you're not just in front of the computer all day going, I just want another screen so I can look over here and see how I'm doing on Warcraft.
Anyone who could wear these glasses, these blue sunglasses.
Obviously, you have no shame. So,
Angel of Harlem.
All right, guys. Well, real quick, let's do our picks here.
I got a quick and easy one for you. My 8-year-old daughter came into the room. I can't remember.
That's a horrible pick, Brian. She's your daughter.
She's not very entertaining at all. What does she know about SpaceX? I forgot why or how we got to it, but I showed her the first 5 minutes of the Doctor Who Christmas special and in the Snowman, which I've slipped off of watching Doctor Who pretty much since Christopher Eccleston. Now, this is coming from a guy who watched all of it. Tom Baker watched every single episode growing up. Like, I was deep, deep, deep into Doctor Who. And then at some point when David Tennant came in, I got behind, and then I never quite played catch up because I didn't want to skip over anything. And after a few years, I was like, well, let me watch The Snowman. So I turn it on, and The Snowman terrified Penelope. And the next morning, she gets up and she's like, Dad, I have to watch the rest of that episode so I know how it ends so I won't be scared of The Snowman. And so we start playing it. And luckily, you know, the rest of it's not scary. In fact, the humor was fantastic. And Penelope, who just finished reading The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is deeply, deeply in love with Doctor Who now. She has she's gone back and is watching all of them on Netflix. And my favorite thing was, you know, Netflix has a long archive going back. They have all the way back to the 1970s Doctor Who, which are hilariously terrible. And I had to ask her, I was like, well, you want to go back to this season 6? It's got the previous Doctor, David Tennant, and these are pretty good. And she's like, no, I think I want this Kirk. He seems to be the best at playing the Doctor. And all of a sudden it hit me what everyone was saying on Twitter, which was, you always remember your first Doctor. And so for Penelope, Matt Smith is the Doctor, and he's the standard by which all other Doctors will be judged. So it's a lot of fun to dive back into Doctor Who, and they're all up on Netflix, and it's fun watching them with an 8-year-old who's really into it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, quick piggyback plug. The Who's the Boss podcast we did, me and Ashley did our Snowman review.
What
and
was your
also
verdict?
Big I've been very critical and specifically of the last half season, very much enjoyed The Snowman and very much enjoy where things are headed, specifically with Jenna Louise Coleman.
Very cool. I'm gonna throw out two picks. One is, I don't know if it's still available, but it was PBS, one of their documentary series. They do a thing on profiles. They did one on David Geffen. They had a 2-hour program on David Geffen, who's a name you kind of hear, but a lot of people don't realize the impact he's had. He was one of the 3 founding members of DreamWorks. He had Geffen Records. He's a guy that produced acts like Neil Diamond, going all the way. I mean, obviously the much bigger acts than Neil Diamond, is trying to think of, off the top of my head. I mean, just a ton of people he worked from Elton John on Ford. He was the guy, he produced the movie Risky Business, which launched Tom Cruise. Later on would do films like Interview with a Vampire. He's done film. He's done music. He's, and he's very, very philanthropic guy, fascinating guy. He got his start at William Morris working in the mailroom. He lied and said that he had a degree from UCLA. When somebody he worked with got fired because they found out that this other guy didn't actually go to the college that he said that he did.
Right.
Geffen showed up earlier every morning and sorted through the mail and pulled out anything from UCLA so he could find out when they sent the letter to say he didn't go to UCLA, and he rewrote it to say that he did.
No way!
And this guy, incredible guy, launched a number of musical careers, became a manager, owned the rights to stuff, became a billionaire, got on philanthropic stuff, still very active in the business, one of the most powerful people in the business. So it's a 2-hour documentary on him, a fascinating guy, fascinating guy. But my other pick is, I'd never watched it all the way through, and I said, let me just sit down and watch. And I watched it over a series of a couple nights, and I really got what people talked about when they talk about this movie so excitedly, almost romantically, about how much this movie made them fall in love with movies and what you could do. And I had never seen this until just a week or so ago, and that is the original 1933 King Kong.
Oh, wow.
Which it's you know you got to adjust to the idea. You know, this is a film made in 1933. Talkies were still quite new. The idea of even having people speak in films was a new idea at this point. And then you look at the special effects, and first you go, oh, it's they're using 12 frames per second and a 24 frame stuff, and you can see his fur move. But then you stop back and you look at some of the matte shots. You look at how clever they do stuff where he's holding, you know, Fay Wray in his hand that's clearly, you know, a doll, and then he sets her down on the ground and the woman walks away, and you look at the artistry and the little sleight of hand they did, and you look at, man, there's so many things that work wonderfully well for something that was done in 1933 with no computers, no digital effects. It was all done, you know, either in camera or it was done using very, very simple processing sort of things where you leave part of the film unexposed and you have to plan a lot what you can do. You don't sit there and shoot it and then say, we can fix this in the editing room later with CGI.
Right.
An amazing achievement. And it's an amazing story that goes from the voyage of the venture ship to Skull Island and the battles between, you know, King Kong and dinosaurs, then to New York City. And you sit back and you go, holy cow, what a movie. You know, 1933, this movie's, you know, already is almost, you know, 80 years old. I mean, it's going to be 80 years old this year.
Wow.
Okay.
And if I could piggyback much as Justin did, I had the same experience watching Metropolis for the first time. Mm-hmm. There's multiple versions available on Netflix, and most recently, I think it was only last year, the first complete print was discovered in Argentina, like in decades. Like they just assumed that the full cut, because when it first came out, they're like, you can't do this, and they chopped it all to hell, so it made no sense. But the full cut is very, very much worth watching.
Oh yeah, and it's an amazing period too. As you take like both those films, like that and King Kong. King Kong was made right before we went through this sort of period in the 30s and the 40s, where all of a sudden we decided to censor things. And King Kong was done right before then, and it was one of the last movies that came out where, you know, it looks like she's almost naked in some of those things. King Kong pulls a woman out of a building, sees that it's not her, drops her.
Wow.
The woman dies. And I mean, he eats people. He literally bites people in half and stuff. And it's a horror movie in many ways, but, you know, get over, you know, you can go, ah, look at the effects. Hey, look what they did in 1933. You know, imagine what those filmmakers would do with the tools of today. And it makes you realize that, you know, we're kind of maybe underselling what we could do. But anyhow, King Kong.
Right on.
True story, too.
Yes. I like Quentin Tarantino movies, and I really like the new movie that he did. Django Unchained is something that is really, for me, kind of like it's almost Tarantino on a level of parody without it being like crossing the line into something that's like funny. It's just if you are a fan of Tarantino movies, all of the tropes are there, all of the things that you want in a Tarantino movie, including just like this seamless blend of suspense and humor and violence and, you know, big ideas in pithy quotes, you know, like all those things are right there, along with just a murderer's row of acting talent. I mean, you know, there's a scene in which playing these very uniquely Tarantino characters, Christoph Waltz, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Samuel L. Jackson are all kind of matching wits as their own. It's like watching like a charisma monster movie, where they're all just, you know, forcing their own personality on each other. And it's just amazing. It's just fantastic. I highly recommend it if you dig Quentin Tarantino stuff. And it is the best thing out right now in the theaters, for my money.
Question. Where would you rank it with Inglourious Bastards?
Over.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
for me,
awesome.
Over. Yeah. It's a movie that's a little bit, it's far more linear than Inglourious Bastards, where if, you know, you are all in on with this movie based on how you like the performance and story of Jamie Foxx's and Christoph Waltz's characters, because you follow them all the way through. Whereas Inglourious Bastards, as much as I love it, you know, if you're hot or cold on, you know, one of the three plots that are going on, then you're taking out, you know, kind of a third of it. So for me, I and maybe, I mean, we'll see in 6 months where I rank it. But walking out of it, to me, I felt like, a lot of the ideas he had and really interesting ideas in Inglourious Basterds were kind of refined more in Django.
I'm excited to see it because, like, there's always something I like in his movies. I don't often like the whole things. Like, there's stuff I liked in Kill Bill, but I didn't like all of the whole thing. And I don't think the last time I liked even like Pulp Fiction, which is my favorite one he did, I didn't like all of it, but I liked enough of it to say that was probably my favorite. And then Inglourious Basterds, I put that up there with Pulp Fiction. And so I'm excited to see Django. Because I thought after he did this Grindhouse movie, I was like, oh, man.
Dude, I love the Grindhouse movie. It's like,
Death Proof.
What's that?
I can't defend Death
Proof. Well, you know what? Death Proof was Quentin's one, right?
Yeah, that was Quentin's.
I'll tell you what.
Rodriguez, this was fun.
Everything
I loved Planet Terror.
Everything I liked about Death Proof, about what it was saying about the standard tropes of the horror genre, was blown out of the water by Cabin in the Woods. Like, after seeing Cabin in the Woods, I can't even justify Death Proof as being this smart commentary.
Yeah,
I was like, Inglourious Basterds brought me back. Inglourious Basterds, yeah. I go, this is what I want to see Tarantino doing. This is Tarantino pushing buttons in this, they kill Hitler. That didn't happen. It's a Tarantino movie. God damn it. He can make it happen. And with Django, the idea that he says, hey, I'm going to tackle slavery and the spaghetti Western. I'm going to drop the N-bomb so many times it'll be a controversy, but people are going to be divided on this, in a good dialogue way is exciting, and I just can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easily the headiest kind of subject matter that he's often dealt with unsavory people. It's safe to say that these characters, in both Inglourious Basterds and in Django are the most unsavory of history's characters, that he's literally pulling out a rogues gallery of like the worst human beings to ever live, that he is making the villains in these movies because he wants to have a very, a direct path to see our heroes get their revenge. There are things you can criticize, and even as big of a Tarantino fan as I am, there are scenes in every single one of his movies, including, my favorite, Pulp Fiction. Like, you can cut the cab scene. The cab scene's terrible, and that's, like, my favorite movie of all time. And there are those elements in Django where you're like, well, Jesus, did you really need to have that? But including a scene in which somebody has a foreign accent, and you can watch that, and you will know what I'm talking about when you see it.
Okay.
But other than that, it's so great. And to be honest, I really have been The Hobbit is something else that we haven't talked about, but I really had a great time with. Hobbit was I was totally in. The two biggest things that I thought I was going to have a problem with The Hobbit was, A, I thought they were stretching the source material, especially considering that book is 19 chapters and I had just listened to it on an audiobook, and B, that the high frame rate stuff might have been a cliff too far for Peter Jackson to jump. And by the end of the movie, I was in on both. I was just, I wanted more and more of that universe. And it's just understand going into it that it is a return to the Lord of the Rings universe almost more than it is, a adaptation of The Hobbit as a book. It's a compilation of other Tolkien material so they can tell him and Fran Walsh and everybody can tell another story in this oeuvre.
Right on.
Well, there you have it. Brian's pick, my pick, and Justin's five picks. And,
two! And you had two.
I had two.
I'm kidding. You piggybacked, remember?
Yeah. No wrong with piggyback. Quick.
That was all good. It's all very helpful.
Don't try to snug a snugger here, man. Come on, man.
It's like at the end of like television show commercials. It's like, Mad About You, Seinfeld, and remember, Frasier at 9:30.
I after watching that Geffen documentary, I went and started looking at, like, for some reason I found myself looking up television shows in the 80s, and then you have Wikipedia pages that tells you what shows premiered in what years, and that takes you, all of a sudden you're looking at trailers for things from The Highwayman with Jacko,
It's so weird because, like, I remember seeing old trailers in the 90s being like, wow, this is, we tolerated trailers being this dumb in the early 80s, and then in the early 2000s, I'm like, wow, we tolerated trailers being that dumb in the early 90s, and now I look back, I'm like, wow, we tolerated trailers being that dumb in the 2000s?
Meanwhile, let's go watch Two and a Half Men.
Yeah, sure, right?
All right, I have a real quick idea before we wrap this up. And maybe we recruit a few other people, but I was thinking of an idea for like a special event kind of podcast with the Oscars coming up. If we pick a year and we go back and we watch back when the Best Picture was only four movies, we watch the four movies and we decide now in 2012 what was really the best movie of that year.
Dude, you know what would be great is if there's a way that we could not know which one won. Like if we could have a third party who isn't us say watch these four movies, pick the best picture, and then we watch them, and then we argue, we come to a consensus about what the best picture is, and then we open an envelope, and then we have to, then we could be surprised and angry at what the actual best picture
I mean
was.
I think if we took it, I don't know what the best picture was in like 84.
That's what I'm saying. Let's pick your
Ghostbusters was the best picture in 84. What won? I don't know.
That's true.
But yeah, so I think we should hook that up sometime around the Oscars. I think that'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
I like that idea. I don't think I've actually been to a movie theater in 3 months, so I'm so behind on everything, but
well, that's good. It's not like you got anything interesting happening in that world where it might be good to be up to date.
Yeah, well, I tried to go see The Hobbit. I went to go see The Hobbit, and then everybody else was going to go see it. One person gets sick, then another person gets sick, and then I'm like, do I want to be the only guy by myself seeing The Hobbit? I mean, I wouldn't be the only guy by myself seeing The Hobbit, let's be honest, but...
Oh, I did rewatch Looper. I bought Looper so I could show my wife because I snuck off. I committed Looper adultery by seeing it in the theaters without Bonnie. And so as penance, I bought it. And I found the experience on iTunes was pretty good because it came with all the deleted scenes. And
cool.
You remember that scene when he's sitting there saying, you know, I don't want to talk about time travel S because we'll just be here making diagrams with straws. And then the next scene that was later cut is him pulling, you're like, give me those straws. And then he actually does a diagram explaining about how his memories work.
That's awesome. I just like the idea that you can, if you have a compelling enough story and characters, you can kind of say like, hey, we're competent. Take our word for it. There's an explanation. Now shut up, nerds, and enjoy the movie.
Yeah, totally. It was fantastic. It
Speaking
definitely
of Star
up.
Trek Into Darkness trailer, I kind of like.
Looking awesome. Like looking awesome.
Oh my God. There's something about that moment in the trailer with the hand on the glass and the Spock hand on the glass that for some reason, like it triggers something emotional in me. Like I kind of like well
See,
up.
That's weird. Like for trailer. Me, it's the reverse. It makes me super guarded because that iconic moment in Wrath of Khan was the culmination of a, you know, 30-year friendship between two people we'd seen forever. And then one of them dying. But like, meanwhile, just last movie, Spock and Kirk hated each other. So if that is their hands,
we don't know how much time they're jumping.
I don't know. I'm saying,
If I might interrupt for a moment, I didn't even notice that moment in the trailer.
What?
Abrams has said specifically the first movie is about them learning to having to work together. This is the movie about them becoming friends.
Yeah.
And the idea that they're not a family yet, but they become a family. And so he's a guy, those are the story beats he's going to focus on. He's, you know, we're going to get, I mean, that's all he cares about, to the point that, you know, we're getting, hey, some guy's pissed off at the Federation and comes back and attacks Earth.
Sherlock
we're getting
Holmes
the same story from the first one. We're getting the same story from his Mission Impossible 3. It doesn't matter. He's going to tell us a great story, and I'm going to love it.
That's true. Fair enough.
No. I'm just saying.
Dude, it's good. It's good.
Benedict Cumberbatch with his Benedict Cumberbatch voice.
It's good to get the gang back together. We should do this more often.
I gotta start crying.
Say it.
What am I?
I don't know.
Spock
you're
Spock kitten, Spock mime, Vulcan mime.
Vulcan mime. All right.
It's made that up for you right there.
Now you can steal it, world. Enjoy.
Yeah, for our audio listeners, you can probably figure out what it is.
Okay, yeah, it's Spock mime. You give him the punchline, and that's all they need.
It was weird.
Awesome.
want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.